Welcome to Idle Red Hands, a podcast from Japan about gaming and gamer life.
Hi, welcome to the Idle Red Hands. I'm Lyle.
I'm Jeremy.
I'm Wayne.
Are you going to go by Wayne? I thought you might go by Chris.
I thought it would be confusing since there's other Chris. I don't know how
but
often
you do
other
look
Chris
different. Hi, welcome to the Idle Red Hands. I'm Lyle.
I'm Jeremy.
I'm Chris.
And today we're going to be talking about racial ability modifiers or racial ability traits. You know, when you get the bonus to strength, and in some editions of Dungeons and Dragons, they also give you a negative, such as third edition.
Yeah.
Elves will get +2 to dexterity and -2 to constitution. So the inspiration for that is somebody on Twitter ran a poll to see if people wanted to keep it, like keep Dungeons and Dragons like that, or switch to a class system where you would get your bonuses based on the class you chose. So I'm going to guess like a fighter would get bonuses to their strength or dexterity.
I think there were a couple options. I mean, kind of splitting it. Like, keep it as it is, move it somewhere else, maybe.
And there was other.
Yeah.
Other was an option.
But I think since they were talking about D&D 5th edition specifically, another possibility was backgrounds. So you kind of had, like, race, class, and background as an option for the modifiers to come from.
Mm-hmm. I checked today, and keeping it as race narrowly beat out class. So what do we have to discuss? The polls.
The polls are in.
We didn't even start.
Yeah, so why would people want to change it? I know Mike Merles actually said that before he went into witness protection and hiding, said that I think it was one of his regrets for 5th edition is not moving it from race to class. I think he said that in a tweet or something.
Given that 5th edition was built by committee, I mean, do you think you really could have done that?
Let's explore in this discussion.
All right. No, I'm thinking, like, as lead designer, if you wanted to do something, what was stopping you? Mm. Except from maybe splitting the...
It could be hindsight.
Hindsight. Yeah, I'm thinking, like, people hated it so much. Oh, another version of Pathfinder splits off from D&D 5e.
So what we're going to do is talk about why people might have a problem with the current system, why people might like the current system, and try to come to some compromise or solution.
Or just agree to argue and disagree.
No, we're going to be satisfying everyone.
Chris, I think you may have voted for switching it to class. Yeah. What would you say are the problems with having it, or what it is currently, is having the bonuses come with the race?
Having it tied to race is kind of uncomfortable because it says certain things that you
the
may
kids
not
these days prefer problematic.
Is that what I said?
No,
all right.
It
kind of says certain things that you may not want to be saying about race. To kind of like extrapolate back in our world, like we're talking about like fantasy races of elves and dwarves and you know, all kinds of things like that. But the fact that they can all interbreed, most of them, leading to things like half elves, half orcs, whatever, kind of means they're not distinct species. That's what a species is, something that can't successfully interbreed.
Right.
And the fact that they can all breed with humans, leading to these half things, means that even though you have these different ability modifiers, you're kind of talking about people as a whole. And to me, that's uncomfortable because it parallels some pretty old school style of thinking about actual races in the real world.
Mm-hmm.
If races in D&D could not interbreed, then I'd be a little bit more comfortable with it.
Hmm.
And I understand that you want to show an elf is different from a dwarf is different from a human.
Right.
And so that's one reason to do it.
Yeah.
But I would almost prefer it if the race you picked gave you a range of what your ability score could be, but then that number came from a different place. For example, like instead of a range of 3 to 18, which would be humans and everything.
Right.
Maybe say dwarves could be a range of 10 to 20 in constitution.
Okay.
Or elves, you know, put it in dexterity or whatever. And I realize that it's kind of the same thing, right? Or it's similar to making them different. But it feels a bit more like genetics where you might be predisposed to something, but the factors that actually get you the number come from a different place. That makes it a bit more palatable to me.
Okay. Okay. Hmm. Yeah. I have seen that. And what was surprising doing research for this podcast is that I found that, like, for example, in original Dungeons and Dragons and what we call basic Dungeons and Dragons, in contrast to Advanced Dungeons and Dragons. They actually didn't do that, like provide bonuses to if you picked a dwarf, you didn't get a bonus to something. But putting the limits is very much like Advanced Dungeons and Dragons and...
Oh, the old classes, sorry, yeah.
Yeah, or even like in Advanced Dungeons and Dragons where you can pick a dwarf and it's not just its own class, but a dwarf fighter. But then they would say like, yeah, they give limits to what, you know, the maximum...
Oh, that's right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, the, like the your maximum dex or your maximum strength. But I am a little bit surprised that you would be before the range because I would say, I mean, in a way it's six of one, half a dozen of the other, but I think it's a bit worse in that if you, like I have no problem with either version. You know, I don't mind if you get bonuses based on what race you chose or if we're going to put limits on race. But if somebody had a problem with the real world racism and that pseudoscience from like 100 years ago, then I would think bonuses kind of, talk about a progressive mentality, bonuses represent kind of the privilege, if you will, of the different races. But you should be able to break past that. Each individual should be able to break past that. And you have the limits, then you put a cap on it. So like, no matter what you do or what a halfling does, the halfling will never be as strong as a human, or they'll cap out at 16 or something like that. If you're going to have a problem with one, I could see the limits being even more problematic.
That's fair.
And as far as like, you know, like a meta, and within the camp, like a fantasy campaign, I'm totally fine with it. But if you're going to bring in real world stuff, it's, and you're talking about like real ethnicities and the differences, then you're saying that no matter what, you know, an indigenous person, like a First Nations person in Canada does, they'll never be able to go past this level of something. Yeah,
that's fair. And you putting it that way, yeah, kind of says, yeah, if it was a hard cap, which is pretty much what I said, then that is pretty much the same as the bonus. And yeah, where it's like, okay, well, these whatevers are so many points higher than someone else and whatever. And that not always being the case in real life, then yeah, I see how that's kind of worse. So based on that, just scratch that and move to something like background or class.
Right.
Class makes more sense because, I mean, that defines so much else of what your character can do in D&D. I mean, then why not just stick it all there?
Right, yeah. I definitely can see that. Like a wizard's going to be more academic than than your standard fighter, so they might get a bonus in intelligence, and the fighter gets bonuses to something physical. Like you mentioned, yeah, I think the half orcs and half elves, and I would love to do away with them because I do think it muddies the water. I mean, not only in this discussion, but when we had the discussion on you know what to call them, race or species, now ancestry in the new Pathfinder in Forbidden Lands,
is it kin?
Yes, kin.
Yeah.
Right. I keep saying race just because that's what it is in D&D.
No, absolutely. I think it makes it clear to people. So,
I'd prefer something else.
The half...
Whatever.
The half races. They muddy things. So I'd be happy to get rid of them. But, I mean, if you think about, like, dog breeds, you know, if you were going to have a fight between a pit bull and a chihuahua, they're still dogs. But still, like, a pit bull is going to be stronger. So I can definitely see why people are holding on to the racial bonuses. And why, you know, when you talk about elves, we are going to be thinking of like the agile, lithe elf versus the sturdy dwarf, you know, a halfling versus a Goliath. A Goliath is, you know, on average going to be stronger. So maybe there should be some recognition.
It would actually, you know what? You could do, I mean, this maybe gets a little bit into mechanics, but you're right. I'm coming from a place where, as you said, that should kind of have an effect on the game because the Chihuahua versus the Pit Bull, what's going to win in a fight, right?
Yeah.
So there is some reasoning for it to be tied to ethnicity, or not ethnicity in fantasy, heritage or whatever. Instead of having it be bonuses, you could give each species, whatever, other mechanical effects keyed to an ability. Like an easy one, Dungeons & Dragons 5th edition, you have advantage, disadvantage. Great, Goliaths get an advantage on all strength checks.
Sure.
Doesn't matter what your strength is, that they have now said that, you know, Goliaths are generally speaking stronger than other people. Or, you know, halflings get advantage on stealth checks or dexterity checks for elves, if you want to say that they are. Mm-hmm. And that kind of, in a sense, that kind of makes it better because you're not, well, you're saying this is something that,
but you're saying
actually it's not better.
Even
it's
the word better. Is like advantage.
Yeah,
this like, is yeah. Because I think you can make it like feet.
Yeah,
and they get toughness, which is a really good feat. Whereas the other one gets something like improved initiative because it's faster. But I think
it's kind of the same thing, though.
Yeah, no, I think it is kind of the same thing. And I think maybe sleight of hand's not going to work. You know, it's like if you move, it's still the same situation. Right. So I guess the question is: Are you going to give some? Are races going to be inherently have an inherent advantage in some respect? checks. Mm-hmm. And I think even though I have no problems with the bonuses, the charisma one, and they've done away with it to a certain extent, like in 5th edition, where they don't have any negatives because people don't like negatives. So even back in the day when they say like, well, but a dwarf, you know, wouldn't, you know, have bad charisma in a dwarven culture.
Right.
Whereas it's not like an outsider, an elf or something with higher charisma is going to come into there and people are going to go, let's listen to the elf. Hey, shut up, chieftain. This guy, I don't know, there's just something about, you know, God, I've never noticed just how ugly we are. It's kind of like that Saturday Night Live skit, The Eye of the Beholder. You know, based on the Twilight Zone thing, where you know, she's ugly, but then it's like Pamela Anderson, and they're like, no, you know, wow, it's going to be really hard going back to my pig face wife. now looking at her, it's like the dwarves are like, oh man, we're so jealous of the elves. You get a little money, and then you get yourself an elvish wife or elvish husband. You know, that's the dream.
So. Except they don't like each other and it's baked into the background.
And that's a discussion for another. Yeah.
Tangentially, what you said about reading the 5th edition, I didn't think some of the bonuses made sense. And you saying that kind of, the biggest issue I had was with the tieflings.
Where they get an advantage on charisma.
Yeah. Which I guess maybe part of that is because I think the races in D&D are kind of pushed towards certain classes. And tieflings are kind of pushed towards warlock or bard or whatever, and that's the charisma-based one, so maybe you want to give them the charisma bump. But then I found it really hard to reconcile that with the couple of paragraphs talking about how no one really trusts them. in the background.
Yeah. No, absolutely.
And I'm I don't see how that works.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, I think Dragonborn get a bonus to charisma Dragonborn as well. And there I can understand because it's not, the text doesn't contradict it, which is what I 100% agree with you on the tiefling. And you can also see is even though they are human, a Dragonborn is quite different looking, but every, you know, in a fantasy world, it is kind of, dragons are cool.
Yeah.
And you would be in awe of a dragon. So
demons are cool too.
Well, and then I was thinking, is that kind of the justification for the tiefling is the other world nature of them, this realm.
I thought you were going with here are the two monsters I'd like to sleep with. You got the dragons over here because they're cool, and who doesn't want to, you know, get jiggy with a demon? No, okay, just me. All right, fine. When I was talking about how I didn't think the charisma bump to tieflings made sense, argued that facing that kind of adversity would either force the tieflings to be more self-confident or
to have a
big personality. And I said, okay, I can see that. I still think it's dumb. I still think it doesn't really make sense. Because again, you kind of get into that monolithic culture thing would that happen to every tiefling? No, probably not.
Right.
So the flat bump to an entire race as a blanket kind of doesn't make sense.
But actually, I kind of like what that person said, but I 100% agree with what you're saying. That would apply to an individual, but maybe that's what it is. It's applying it to elvish individuals that would adventure or tiefling individuals that would adventure. Right. So the tiefling race doesn't necessarily get a bonus to the charisma, the particular tieflings that would be attracted to an adventuring, would be a player character, they do get a bonus.
Forbiddenland specifically references that. Like when they talk about the culture, but you are not like that. Mm-hmm. And you're, you know, they always separate, you know, you're choosing this kin, but you're different from everybody else because you left, you know, you're seeking your fortune. And I think what Chris is saying, I think, baking that into the race and making kind of everybody deal with that is not necessarily a great thing, and especially when it matches to a class. You know, like if half-orcs have such an intelligence disadvantage that they shouldn't be magic users, or you know, many of the things that kind of discourage you from, you can't pair certain races and classes because you're starting behind.
Well, you can, but you just don't get the bonus to intelligence.
Right.
Because in 5th edition, you don't get a negative. Like that's been done away with. Like previous editions of Dungeons and Dragons, in Advanced Dungeons and Dragons, they did have, I think all the way up to at least 3rd, can't remember 4th.
Yeah, I can't remember 4th.
There was a bonus, you get bonuses and then you get a negative. And then it kind of, you got more bonuses.
Mm-hmm.
Like in Advanced Dungeons and Dragons, you got more bonuses. It was +1, +1, and then a -1.
Oh, really?
If I'm thinking Pathfinder and Starfinder, I think the negatives are still in there. And that was making it very obvious, this race, this class, this race, this class, much more than I noticed in 5th edition.
Yeah. But I definitely take when people say it does discourage you from being a half-orc wizard because you don't get that bonus.
Mm-hmm.
to it, and you're saying like my bonuses are elsewhere, but I mean that appeals to somebody who's a min-maxer, and that's fine. You know, I mean,
and I think that's becoming, because of the influence of, you know, computer games like fantasy-based PC RPG games, a lot of people are thinking that way. Well, what's my maximum damage? What's my, how do I learn the most spells? How do I advance as fast as possible? That's a newer.
But I guess you could say then when you have a half-orc wizard, that that seems like a more unique character.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Because it is going against type.
Mm-hmm. It does. And I think putting the bonuses somewhere else would encourage that more, which... Mm. If you're a half-orc wizard and your bonus to intelligence comes from being a wizard, then all wizards are going to at least be competent, you know, at what they do, one would hope. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I agree that kind of having those odd race class pairings are interesting. I wonder how many groups would go, yeah, your character is odd and kind of interesting and this is great, versus couldn't you have done something that's going to be effective?
We need you to heal, not open doors. Yeah,
exactly, exactly. Like, it's great. You've made muscle wizard, right? Yeah, punch through that door.
They've always had where, like, even back in the beginning, they would have, like, your prime requisite is this ability. Mm. And older versions of Dungeons & Dragons would say, hey, if you have it at a certain level, we'll give you bonuses to your experience, which I don't think is going to work so much these days, because I think it's very common to give experience to the group as opposed to the individual now. One thing you could do is actually do everything, you know, do both. Mm. I don't particularly like necessarily giving bonuses like intelligence, wisdom, or charisma based on their race. Because, you know, for example, wisdom is like experience. So why can't any race be wise? But giving like physical, like recognizing that there are physical differences between the races, like a halfling is very, very short and small, whereas a Goliath is, you know, very big and strong. So, I mean, there's, you know, I mean, you take human, like, well, human, going to get a wrestling match with a gorilla? No, it's not going to go well. So maybe
having... You're also not going to have a half gorilla. Let's be honest. Going back to the D&D races, being able to interbreed with absolutely everything, right?
Right. Well, we won't talk about my college life, but... So, I mean, what you could do is tie like certain physical bonuses to that, to the race, and then classes, again, provide bonuses. Like you get an intelligent bonus because you took a wizard, because it's very academic. You get charisma bonus for being a sorcerer because, I mean, or you just do it. What is the main thing? A cleric would get a wisdom bonus. So, I mean, you have to imagine that you would get woke enough or getting...
Would you? You're talking about a cleric.
I was just trying to think where you get in touch with your divine self or get in touch with your God.
It sounds like, though, but my feeling for that is just if you're going to do that, sure, okay, I kind of understand not wanting to say anything kind of intelligence-based is based on race, because that's kind of uncomfortable. But then, like, is really saying physical, and okay, you're right. Size difference is really going to matter and strength's really going to matter, but would tying physical ability to race, is that really any better than saying mental stuff? So I would kind of want to just do neither.
Well, the
But also on that split, if you did go the kind of physical mental split, it sounds like most of the mental ability modifiers would come from magic classes.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which may be a way to kind of like, what's to prevent someone from getting like a double bonus, right? Like if you kind of keep physical bonuses to race, someone goes, great, I'm going to be a elf, so I'm going to get this bonus in dexterity, and I'm going to go to wizard, so I'm going to get this bonus in intelligence too, versus someone who picks someone who gets no bonus for physical and like a fighter.
Yeah, and then you get a bonus to strength or dex. You choose, and then they can stack, so you can maximize. Like I don't think, like you mentioned earlier, about background can provide a bonus to your ability as well. So a farmhand maybe gets a bonus to constitution or something, whereas someone who's an adept gets a bonus to their intelligence or their wisdom. And an entertainer or performer gets a bonus to their charisma. People are saying, but that now you've got plus six, so you could juggle it around. It's like maybe two. You know, plus one, plus one, plus one, or one of them gives you plus two and the others give you plus one. So I mean, you can always change the number. I mean, there's always going to be things that like a race is going to be better at, like seeing in the dark. Like some races can see in the dark, some can't, but that's an advantage. So you could say, I mean, there's always, to give a race flavor, they're going to have to have something.
I do not disagree. Yeah. And in that specific example, the dark vision.
Dark vision, mm-hmm.
Dark vision. A race having dark vision or not kind of doesn't say any... It says much less kind mm-hmm. of about how, I guess for lack of a term, good the race is overall, right? Like, mm-hmm. dark vision doesn't say, hey, this person's a great intelligence or mm-hmm. a high strength or whatever. It just kind of says, you can do something that other people can't.
Right.
So I'm much more comfortable with doing things like that mm-hmm. than tying them, giving them an ability bump. And I think... For me, I'm more comfortable tying especially ability bonuses to the nurture side of the nature-nurture dichotomy. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, how many times have we looked through a book and gone, okay, it doesn't make sense for my dwarf sailor to have these bonuses and these penalties when they grew up on a ship. So having it tied to like a sailor background or whatever, mm-hmm. then it kind of says, oh yeah, I made a dwarf sailor and I don't have these kind of numbers that... don't really back that up.
Because, I mean, you look at a dwarf, I mean, they do have backgrounds now, so you could pick a sailor yeah. background, and it's going to give you a...
Yeah, but I mean, I forget what, you, what dwarves... Mm-hmm. Sorry, I got you off. I forget what dwarves have, but I mean, they probably just the bump to constitution, right? Looking at...
I'm thinking not only the ability, the racial ability modifier that a dwarf gets. Yeah, one is constitution, but like if it is based on what people imagine dwarves are. They live down in the...
Maybe pull your head out of all that Tolkien hole.
Well, sure. I mean, you could totally redo that. And again, that's a pretty good discussion when you talk about like a Eurocentric Dungeons and Dragons mm-hmm. or something like that. Mm-hmm. But kind of looking at what we have and it's like dwarves are this. And yeah, some of, you have a dwarven sailor and you're looking at all these things that come with being a dwarf that aren't necessarily going to be super helpful. Being a sailor. I don't know anybody who's got, I mean, you could have like an aquatic elf or something. And say,
yeah, well, then you don't really need to be a sailor. Who needs a boat?
I'm sailing the waves.
Who needs a boat when you're aquatic? Yeah. No, that's a good point.
I think there's always going to be issues. So if you make it too a la carte, then you've just made like everybody's making all the races are the same, except some are 3 feet tall, some are 4 feet tall, some are 6 feet tall.
Right.
Yeah.
Not that I'm not a fan of that either, but that seems to get glossed over way.
You want the 6 foot dwarf, right?
No, I'm saying like height difference
basketball
between
player.
Height differences between D&D playable races
yeah.
is something that for often better times just gets glossed over, right? Where it should, especially when you're going to buy gear, it seems like every shop stocks every size for every person, when really it'd be like, sorry, we don't have any 3 foot tall armor.
I guess I think it depends on
it depends on the campaign, because really yeah. sometimes you're not going to want to deal with that all the time, mm-hmm. but it kind of seems like such a noticeable thing that you might have an adventuring party of a Goliath and a gnome where like, okay, the size difference should really kind of matter.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I mean, I think they've glossed over, for example, like a longbow. And the question is, can a smaller race use a longbow? And you're like,
they can use a halfling-sized longbow.
Yeah, something. Yeah. And they're like, well, no, but how about, no. They can't because they're too small.
Well, I mean,
it's a longbow for me.
Yeah, exactly. Come on. That line from The Hobbit about, look, okay, here's a knife. For you, it's a short sword.
Yeah. So I'll get the short sword, but
no, a knife. Yeah. Oh, but if I'm a halfling and I bought a knife in a halfling village, it's going to be halfling size, which means it's a halfling knife. So can I mean, honestly, like mechanically, who wants to deal with that bullshit?
Right. I think a lot of it has to do with also that shorthand. You know, for new players and people coming in, if they have any experience of, you know, fantasy races and Lord of the Rings movies or whatever, they're going to have expectations. And if you want everybody to just be comfortable knowing what they're dealing with, you know, playing a dwarf, it's going to be like this, and playing an elf, it's going to be like this. I mean, I think that's why that stuff still exists. Because I think people that have played more than Dungeons & Dragons or, you know, a range of systems have tastes now, and they want interesting combinations, and they want to be able to world build and have, you know, different types of fantasy races. But for the most part, I think D&D might be, you know, sticking to that kind of idea because, you know, they want people to know what to expect. Yeah. But I say that, though, and then you look at the list of playable races in Dungeons & Dragons now, and it's pretty crazy.
It's ridiculous. It's ridiculously
well, long. I think it was a really good point. Yeah, Dungeons & Dragons has a lot less flexibility than other games, mm-hmm. and that is kind of like the Coke Classic or Coca-Cola. Yeah. So when it changes the formula...
Right.
People are going to react in a poorly. Way that they wouldn't. Like Pepsi, like who cares? Oh,
all right. We just lost all our Pepsi.
Yeah, not many.
Yeah. No, I think that's a good point, Jeremy. And I think that's one of the strengths of fantasy RPGs is the fact that maybe even more so than science fiction, pretty much everybody is familiar with your bog standard Tolkien-esque fantasy tropes, which make it the probably, for better or worse, the easiest genre of game to jump into. Hmm. And like when I'm trying out like new mechanics, I almost kind of default to bog standard fantasy because I don't have to think about, you know, kind of, I guess, edge case scenarios, or I don't have to do any world building. I kind of like, okay, well, we're just working with this, you know, group of tropes, and let's just see if these mechanics work. Mm-hmm. And it's real easy to do stuff for that. But I mean, the flip side is stuff isn't really notable or that interesting, in my opinion, because you kind of have to walk that narrow road of, okay, well, we've all collectively agreed that this is what dwarves are, and mm-hmm. this is what elves are, and
yeah.
deviating too far from that for D&D, that's trying to be kind of everything to everybody or reach as broad an audience as possible, they kind of can't do it.
Sure. But I mean, but you said it, is like, this is what elves are and this is what dwarves are, and that's what's appealing or not appealing about them. And you could say that if you want something like a dwarf but different, then you could
don't
just
say play a gnome because they're dumb.
No, but you could just say have another race that's kind of what do you like about a dwarf, and you then know what I mean? It's like people are, yeah, sure, they're bringing that familiarity of I kind of know what a dwarf is, but a lot of people are coming is like, yeah, and I think that's really cool. I like this about a dwarf, and then if you strip too much away from the dwarf, they're no longer a dwarf.
No, that's yeah. fair. And someone coming to the game going, this is what's cool about dwarves, and then them opening up like the book and going, and these dwarves don't have it. What's going on?
Yeah,
you
know, exactly.
Like if someone sat down and played D&D and you gave them the Cronopia book, you're like, what are these feral beastmen kind of guys?
Yeah.
So yeah, I absolutely agree with that. But what you said about kind of everyone knowing, okay, this is a dwarf, the only way that's going to change is for there to be other media that not contradicts that but expands that.
Mm-hmm.
Going to keep wearing that groove of what a dwarf is unless people try and break it. You know, I'm not saying D&D has to do that,
right?
But I mean, the only way that's ever going to happen is to do things that are different.
Yeah, but I mean, you don't necessarily need to have a different dwarf.
No, I'm
you
not saying
just have
you
a
do,
different race. You know, I mean, one thing I think I've seen this more than once, where people are like editors, and they say, if I see another fantasy book with elves and dwarves, I'll just like reject it.
Mm.
And they're not saying if I see another book with stereotypical elves and dwarves, they're just saying elves and dwarves, full stop. And so you write, you know, a fantasy book without those races, because maybe there's just too much, like our concept of them is just too much set in stone now.
Mm.
And that's fine, because that's what an elf is now. And
sure.
That's what a dwarf is now. But yeah, like you said, now like 5th edition or Dungeons & Dragons, they just keep adding races that you can play. So
what you said about just make something that's like a dwarf but not, I think that is why we're seeing so many. Races in D&D, for example. Because, like, I was thinking about both the race thing and the class thing when I was making up these, like, hero cards for a different game I was working on.
Mm-hmm.
And much fewer kind of stats and resources to work with than D&D.
Right.
And things started getting real samey.
Mm-hmm.
And I ran into the problem of, okay, even with classes and races, how do I make these things these distinct enough to kind of warrant having a separate entry, essentially?
Yep.
And I think you run into that problem pretty quick with not only D&D, and it sounds like I'm bashing on D&D,
right.
But like wanting to do something that's like a dwarf but different. Okay, if you keep it, where's the line between this is too much like a dwarf, so why have it, and this is completely different, and how much more design space is there to be completely different?
But you know, we were talking about that, and I'm just thinking, like, maybe just when you play fantasy and most science fiction, as opposed to like a modern day game where everybody's a human. So all of the flavor comes from, not the fact that they are human. It comes from what profession they choose and, you know, their experience and that. So you're playing like a game of spies. It's all about your role in that.
Yep.
But with fantasy, it is about picking a race and picking a class. So each has got to bring something, and I guess they got to bring their stereotypes, if you will, for lack of a better word, because that's what people expect. And then you mix and match. And if you have a game like Starfinder versus a game like BattleTech, and people are unfamiliar with BattleTech, there's just humans. And Starfinder...
And giant funny robot suits.
Yeah, exactly. But
there was an extra part to it.
Yeah, so there it's like, which giant robot? Or maybe you're going to be a pilot of...
In that case, why wouldn't you play a different game? I'm sorry. I thought the whole thing of BattleTech was the giant fighting mechs.
I know, you could be an aerospace pilot. Yeah,
sure.
There's two options, come on. But yeah, in Starfinder's like a potpourri of different races, alien or alien species that you can play. Like that's just part of it. And then they've all got to, even though, you know, there's billions of these creatures, they're all going to bring like a certain, you know, limited pool of stuff that defines them.
You kind of made me think of something else. So here's a question. Touching on the discussion we had about this is a dwarf and this is an elf versus something like Starfinder and science fiction. it seems like science fiction, you have a much broader range of what is accepted for species in science fiction, just because the sense seems to be, well, the world is so open, or the setting is so open, anything can exist in space. Mm-hmm. It seems like you could get away with, not get away, but it seems like you could create a lot more different types of species in science fiction than you could in fantasy, because everyone in fantasy is kind of expecting elf, dwarf, whatever, whatever, mm-hmm. whatever.
And Starfinder has those too.
I'm sure Starfinder does. I mean, come on. I mean, Pathfinder.
Yeah, that's a good point, because there isn't like one science fiction book where everything was built upon.
I think that, yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, but if you played Star Trek, you got your Klingons, people got a conception of a Klingon, but you're like, well, I was the pacifist poet Klingon. And you're like,
which is why they're on the ship. Which is why they're on the ship.
Yeah. So can I be the kind of like the, what is Deanna Troi? She was a Betazoid? Is that what she's called?
I think so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's
an empath. Yeah,
yeah. I have zero Star Trek cred. Worf, how is he feeling? But actually, Deanna Troi was pretty rubbish too. It's like, he's angry. He's like screaming into the screen. I sense anger from him. Really, thanks.
Is that her fault or is it the writer's fault?
Yeah. So, I think they really liked the halves too, right? Because they had a lot of half Vulcans and
Klingon, a couple
half. Yeah, well, exactly. Yeah, again, like a Vulcan. It's like, they're really defined. So I think once something gets, maybe Star Wars has a little bit more, because people don't really know what the different races do, because it's pretty much the human show.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So people are like, oh, what's a Rodian do? And you're like, what kind of personality? I just know, you know, a couple of them. If you watch Clone Wars, you see a few, or the guy that got shot in the cantina.
Mm-hmm.
So
hand shot first, totally.
I guess as soon as something becomes more defined, it's defined, and then people want to then lock it down. And yeah, like Jeremy said, and then they're going to come to that game with those conceptions.
Right.
So you've got to deliver.
You're telling me in all those West End D6 Star Wars source books, they didn't give the Rodians pluses to something and an extra die to something and a die penalty and something. I'm sure they did. I don't know what it is.
No, they did. But I guess they had a little bit more fruit. I mean, they had the template system. So you, like everything is like you're picking, this is what you pretty much get, and you make little tweaks. And if you wanted, like, no one can understand the Wookiee. They don't technically can't speak or,
But then you just
have But if you had, like, I want to play a weak Wookiee, and people are like, what? Aren't Wookiees, because they tear off your arm when they lose games and stuff.
I'll just tear off your finger.
Yeah. So again, as soon as you give people enough information on a species, a race, it's like people are going to, I got that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So what you said, I mean, I read something by Tad Williams, a fantasy writer. And you read the Otherland.
So. I did, and after book three, I was like, I'm going to hate finish this thing, but you know what? I'm done with it. This is dumb.
Well, it's not that. Okay. It's his fantasy series, and he presented the elves in a different way, a little bit more vicious, and you mentioned Cronopia, and the elves are presented a little bit more differently than Tolkien. But
giant, armor-clad, axe-wielding berserkers. Yeah, they're pretty cool.
Yeah, so I guess, you would need something to really click and run with it, but then again, I think then Dungeons & Dragons would still be the Tolkien game, and people would build on those other ones.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
And even there, I think, like in Cronopia, like you're going, that's cool because it's different.
Yeah. Yeah. That's true. Yeah.
It's not like if you didn't know that, you're like, oh, these guys like are Lotus Eaters and they have axes, but is that cool? And you're like, no, that's cool because it's different from the normal elves. Yeah. Like, and the orcs in Cronopia, you might go, huh.
The Persian Empire.
Yeah. I'm not. Sure, I really like a Persian empire that looks like these kind of piggish guys. You know, what's that saying about Persians?
Right.
You know,
I hadn't considered that.
But then you're like, no, but that's cool because it's, it's actually giving the orcs a lot of like a culture because Persian culture is cool and sophisticated. So,
yeah, like I'd forgotten. I should have thought about it since I actually, as horrible as it is, like the movie 300, I actually enjoy that movie just because it's so exaggerated. But then I think about the Persian Empire and how poorly that was received, and rightly so.
Yeah,
based on how it's depicted, and you're like, whoa, okay, maybe that wasn't, I kind of justified to myself by saying, okay, but this is the Greeks telling their side of the story. So of course they're going to like make the bad guys, whoever they're going up against, seem monstrous. So to be fair, I want to see the story told from the Persian Empire where the Greeks are like these sort of chimeric, kind of Greek-inspired monsters to kind of balance it out, which of course isn't going to happen. But thinking about the Black Blood Empire, I just assumed when I first reading them, like, oh, the Persian Empire, and they're actually really smart, and they have a, like, alchemy and kind of all this calculus and stuff. Hadn't really considered that the physical appearance would be kind of, could be problematic.
The Persian would be like, oh, wow, we got a role-playing game? We play a prominent role? Yeah, yeah. Oh, who plays us? Yeah, oh, yeah. You know orcs? Those pig guys?
Which I think kind of...
Actually, they don't look as piggy.
No, they don't. Yeah. Raising that point kind of brings me back to what I said kind of towards the beginning, where even though we're talking about fantasy races that do not exist in reality, it's really hard not to draw parallels, intentional or otherwise, to real world cultures, since we're often using cues from real world cultures to help define these fantasy things.
Fair enough, but what would you say the real world culture equivalent of elves is?
In bog standard D&D, I think you kind of avoid that problem.
Okay.
And not necessarily from a decent thing, because I think the bog standard D&D cultures and settings are pretty bland and boring.
Okay.
But that is one way to kind of be safe about it.
Be bland and boring. All right.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm not saying that's the best way.
All right, so that's the solution.
Be bland and boring and play your appropriate race class combination.
What do you think about this idea? And I had a brief exchange on Twitter with the designer of Conjure Hagalas, a game at least
by the apocalypse.
Yeah, partially powered by the apocalypse.
Oh, partially. I'm partially in then.
Partially what?
Partially in. If it's partially PBTA, I'm partially in.
Oh, okay. Blake Ryan, and he was saying, how about like just a standard +2/+2 that you can just assign wherever?
You mean irregardless of species or whatever? Like
irregardless of class, regardless of race, you get +2 and then you assign it. And I kind of like my idea better, as I do. Normally do. But I was wondering, you know, Dungeons & Dragons already has, here are all the different ways you can generate your stats. Mm-hmm. You can roll, how many different roll options are there? There's a lot.
Yeah.
Or you can do the point buy, which I like.
Or the standard array, yeah.
Yeah, the standard array. And couldn't you do that? It's just like, okay, now we got the bonuses. You're going to get a total of 4 bonuses. Two plus twos that are floating just assign wherever. Or here's an option. You base it entirely. Da, da, da. You know, I don't know. I think you could have the little box in each class would say, if you're, you know, that would say this gives you +2 to your intelligence if you're doing that. Mm-hmm. I mean, does that sound something? Or
so in other words, one would come from class. One bonus would come from class. And then you have like another floating bonus that you can kind of put anywhere.
Yeah, I didn't explain it very well. But just like they have all the different variations of how you could do the rolling the dice to get it. Then you can do, here are like 3 or 4 different ways you can apply these 2 +2s. One is it just floating and apply them anywhere. The second is using the racial bonuses. Okay. 3 is using it based on the class.
I see.
And 4 is a combination of the two.
I got you.
So layout wise, I don't know if you get into the book and it's like you would have to add like different, you know, like you turn to dwarf and it's like it either provides you +2 constitution, +2 wisdom, or just +2 your constitution if you're doing the class race combo.
Maybe it could be like an, I see what you're saying now.
Yeah.
Like where they've presented all these optional ways to generate your stats. So here are some optional ways to do the bonuses. Mm-hmm. Either that comes from race, class, or something else. And you could, it wouldn't require that much more space. It would just be kind of like, if you're using this option, you get a bonus to this stat. And then in the class, it'd be like, if you're using this option, you get a bonus of this stat.
Mm-hmm.
Or even backgrounds then, Or just apply it anywhere,
I think one thing that's important with the races and kind of the standard races in fantasy games is to keep that exotic nature of them. You know, human playing humans, and they always explain humans as they're jack of all trades. They're not particularly good, not particularly bad at anything, and they're balanced. And if you want some variation, if you want something tougher, stronger, faster, more dexterous, you'd want to play this variation. And that's exotic and interesting. And I think because those races were kind of taken from, you know, Norse mythology and Celtic mythology, and they're actually things that existed in you know, European legend and myth and folklore, that I think it's an interesting variation, of course, of a European human, but it's an interesting variation of a human that is kind of what we associate with fantasy. And so to lose too much of that, you know, to lose too much of this is a human, this is a human in this direction, this is a human in this direction, would hurt it ultimately. And I think you're not playing fantasy, especially the Tolkien European based fantasy, if you go too far away from, mm-hmm. you know, humans are in the middle and, you know, elves are smarter, more dexterous, and dwarves are stronger and have better constitution. You know, right. If you don't have those, well, I don't want to play a human. So what are the interesting options that have an exotic feel? I don't want to be myself
right.
in this exactly. fantasy yeah. role play.
I think yeah. that's a good point. Yeah.
It is, and I'm thinking of a couple things. The Lorwyn expansion for Magic. Remember that? That was one of the last ones you were in where no humans. It was kind of a fantasy. I mean, it's Magic, so it was, but it was kind of like a kind of D&D-esque fantasy. There were no humans in it mm-hmm. when they made that conscious choice, so everything was kind of different. So, I mean, and I remember reading a design article where, like, this was a conscious choice to make it different. We left humans out.
Right.
But and on that, I guess humans kind of have to be in D&D-esque fantasy, but what I said where D&D is kind of, or fantasy is kind of the go-to to test a rule system, humans are hard to make interesting because all your player options have to be roughly balanced. So if other races are getting like in fifth edition, all the other races get like a +2 to somewhere mm-hmm. and humans get 2 +1s anywhere you want because mm-hmm. we got to make sure everything's kind of even. But then humans are still kind of,
well,
they kind of have to be the everything. Well,
they can't lock down and say, "Hey, we're going to make Vikings."
Oh yeah,
and
yeah.
And everybody's
yeah.
like, "Well, what about every other culture?" So they kind of yeah, yeah. have to say,
"Which is
you could be everything." And here's
which
all
is yeah,
cultures.
Which is entirely right. Like, yeah. if as soon as they started pushing in one direction or another, or yeah. or broke it down by culture or ethnicity, you're like, "Whoa, yeah. that is a real bad idea."
Right.
So do not do that. And they're smart enough to not do that. But then that also kind of means humans are like the bland, boring default.
Well, yes and no. Like, you know, you're right. I agree in that, yeah, they don't want to push it too much. But one thing that I think D&D has gotten much better at in the game, like Forbidden Lands does well, is they're creating different cultures within all the races. So, like, you have the different elves, mm-hmm. and you have the different dwarves, and that. So it kind of shows you that the elves aren't just monolithic. There's a variation there. And with humans, they always tried to do that. So they show, hey, it's not just right. White Europeans, but all these different worlds that are in the default D&D setting. But then they're hamstrung and they can't give any bonuses. And it's like, these guys are really smart.
You could have it came from background.
But background is like, yeah, you could do the sailor or whatever.
Yeah, because background is.
Yeah. But I'm wondering if that's like, if you strip too much away, then it's all becomes like the humans are right now. And everybody's kind of bland, where it gives a lot of flavor text, but just, hey, do whatever.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So, and that's a flaw in like what I was suggesting with the floating bonuses. If you have the floating bonuses, then what do you do with, then you still have to make sure that the races are providing different things. Mm. And it's more than like dark vision or whatever. So they're all going to bring something. Either tropes or stereotypes. Mm-hmm. And then humans will be like, we give you, here's your feet. Here's your +1 to skills.
Since D&D is kind of so heavily based on Tolkien, I mean, what is it that humans brought to in the Tolkien universe? What, dynamism or whatever? Or kind of like, we're not necessarily adventurous, but we kind of have this like vigor to not go out and conquer, but like we're the ones who are kind of, we're inventive, you know?
Yeah.
That's kind of what they were
doing. They're given. Adaptable, yeah, yeah. Versatile.
And also kind of non-magical. I mean, I guess, you know, I guess like, I guess if you're, because I don't know if you would consider Saruman and Gandalf, I mean, depending on how
they
you're reading
are
Tolkien.
Yeah, they're not
yeah, right. Yeah. So so they're not humans. So I think because the idea of magic leaving the world and the age ending, so humans are all that's left. So humans are the thing that's, you know, that lingers, that doesn't have any power, that wanes.
I think even from the beginning with Dungeons and Dragons, the basic game or the original Dungeons and Dragons, the idea is like they have no limit. Mm. So they are like, they're very dynamic. Mm-hmm. So I guess that's what they bring, which is
kind of what they've always bring.
Okay, I just thought of this. So this might not be a...
So it's crap.
It might be a crappy idea. I'll call it what it is, yeah. Let me just say it first. I'll wait. Let me say it. And it's a bit of a departure. So maybe there would be a lot of pushback. But yeah, listening to you talk, you know, but yeah, they're extraordinary individuals. So yeah, maybe don't necessarily have racial ability modifiers, but then you, and not limit, but there are certain things in their culture, like the type of fighters that they become. Mm, mm. So you have a fighter class, but then if you're a dwarf, you're limited on there's a class, but then there's a subclass, and dwarves go into one of these mm-hmm, subclasses. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is playing on stereotypes, but it gets into, it's more getting into the nurture, as you were saying. Mm. And, mm-hmm. you know, there's, I think that, I don't know if that would, I don't think you could do it in main D&D, but maybe you could do like an optional book where it's like mm-hmm. all these classes, and it's like, here's the, I mean, sure, there's the schools of magic or whatever, but I actually, they did that way in the beginning, is gnomes would be illusionists.
Yep, yep, yep.
Mm-hmm. The original school of magic is like, there's wizards and then illusionists, and then they kind of went from there. So mm-hmm. yeah, it actually might be a bit of a throwback. Yeah.
That reminds me of Dungeon World, because your Dungeon World playbook was your class. And then they were kind of trying to emulate kind of old school D&D. So there were holdovers that kind of, you kind of went, oh, okay, I see where this is coming from. But when you picked, after you picked your class, there were tick boxes for the race you picked.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't modify your stats.
Mm-hmm.
It gave you some other kind of mechanical benefit. And what you're saying about fighters, I think like if you picked the fighter playbook and if you then ticked the elf for your race, it was something like you are proficient in long bows, short mm-hmm. bows, things, and these things that other fighters from other races did not mm-hmm. get,
mm-hmm.
where I forget what humans got, but basically everybody got something, and that was all crossed all the different playbooks. I mean, the races and were kind of limited because they were trying to emulate old school D&D. So if you did pick wizard, all your only options were like human, or no, if you picked paladin, the only thing you picked was human, because
you couldn't be anything else. It was super old school.
Like that's what you could pick. Yeah. And people have expanded that to now cover, you know, kind of all the playable races in D&D-esque things. But you could do it that way. The D&D classes, the mechanics are so much more involved than what's on like a Dungeon World mm-hmm. sheet. You'd need like a page or two for each subclass if you did it that way. So
yeah, it definitely would be an option. And another reason why it would be an option is people don't like to hear no. I mean, that's the new standard. And I guess you just got to accept that. So like old school D&D, you go, hey, I was looking at a list from the Magenta Box.
Mm-hmm.
Or I think it was the Magenta Box, or actually the Rules Cyclopedia or something. An old D&D thing. I was looking at a lot of things last night. And there's the table, and it's like, here's your class. Oh, it was AD&D first edition. And it was like, your race. And then it's like, no, you can't. Like, you're an elf.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But people don't want to hear that. And it's like, but why can't elves be druids, you know?
Because this is the game we're playing
right now. Well, I want to be an elvish paladin. You know, they have gods, and, you know, they should have, like, champions. So people don't want to hear no anymore. They want to hear yes.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's why they don't even have negatives. Like, I'm a very robust elf. I'm like, okay, sure.
But I think that's an interesting choice for race. Instead of making a biological, you know, having something within your racial makeup that is adding something to you, is that it is cultural or style wise. And it's from a region. And so, more nurture than nature. And that also means that an elf could be raised in that culture if you wanted that play style, if you wanted that fighting style, and be able to separate things up that way.
That's interesting. What if they tweak the flavor? Mm-hmm. So like an elves get bonus to dexterity, but not because of any racial thing. They value agility, dancing, archery, and things like that, whereas a dwarves value being very hardy in that. And then you can even write, if you are a dwarf raised in an elvish culture, flip.
Yeah.
You know, you're probably going to be a little bit slimmer because of the diet, and you would be, you know, you would make it a point, or you would have practiced this, like the dexterous things. I don't know. Would that kind of rescue the elvish, or sorry, the racial bonuses? Is just saying it's making it sound more cultural than physical?
I think it would. And like what you said about how I was along with you until you said like flip it. I would actually word it just, you know, people raised in culture get this.
Sure.
Or tend to be this instead of just, because then that covers everything. I mean, okay, most elves are going to be not, actually, let's not make that assumption. Elves raised in an elvish culture are going to have this, but so will a half-orc or a dwarf or whatever.
It could lend
to the same extent.
Yeah, but it could lend itself to some body diversity as well.
Mm-hmm.
So you certainly, like, imagine an elf or a Goliath, like a pudgy Goliath growing up in the Shire. But people want to see more diversity in the game. So you're like, you're having like a dwarf raised in an elf culture. That might be pretty appealing. And like visually, what would that look like? And that might make an exciting, how much, like when did that dwarf move to the elvish culture? So how much of the dwarf stuff? I don't know if it gets too messy, and because you kind of would have to pretty much commit to one or the other. But you could have basically somebody who has all the abilities of an elf, but then looks more dwarvish.
Mm-hmm.
It's a way to do it. If you could get kind of messy, if you kind of said these things are inherent, things like dark vision or whatever.
I was saying,
versus things that aren't like human raised in a dwarf culture. You're not going to get dark vision.
I think it could be a real headache. But if a human was raised in the dark, their vision would be better.
It would be better. Not to the point where it would count as dark vision, I don't think.
No, I guess then you're throwing out the entire concept of evolution. and stuff. Yeah. Yeah, I think
like evolution does not happen over a single generation, right?
Well, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. It's like you can't like suddenly like, oh, I can now
then again,
have dark vision that these
also, you know, what
generations and millennia to develop.
We're talking about evolution in the game that has
no exactly
freaking yeah. like intelligent slime cubes, right? So I don't think biology matters at all in D&D.
Well, the intelligent slime cubes were, of course, able to succeed more.
Yeah. So sure, sure,
they
sure.
killed right, all right, the dumb right. intelligent slime cubes.
But I mean,
no. So I think it'd have to be either. If you had something like that, it pretty much would have say you commit to one. Because if you went take what you want, I think it that would be exciting. But it could kind of just make it
even more
worthless and also be a headache for the dungeon master. It's like, oh, what kind of dwarf are you? You are the dwarf that was born in an elvish community until you were your mid-teens. Well, then you lived with the Goliaths for a while, but then we'll really settle in the dwarvish community. So you have like which ability? From what?
Is that really any different from what like all the different sub races of mountain dwarf, hill dwarf, cave dwarf, whatever?
No, I like that.
I'm not saying that's a bad idea. Yeah. I'm just saying you already have all these sub races for all these other things, which have slightly different abilities.
Yeah.
So would it really be that much more difficult than what currently exists now? Yeah, possibly. You'd have to have the two separate lists of essentially nature benefits and nurture benefits, right? For things like dark vision and stuff like that, right? Mm-hmm. Where it's like, here are the things that are just intrinsic to your species. Here are things that are more cultural.
Okay.
And doing it that way would, I hate to say it, more realistic, because we're talking about things that don't exist, but it would be...
Realistic within the world, but
also much more of a headache.
If you gave a list and said, you know, here's nature, here's nurture, you can only pick five of these. The most fun about that would be, and explain narratively how that works. You know, that, and that's not really in D&D, but I think any variation or any kind of twist you want to put on the world, if the player can justify it with some kind of interesting story, I think that would be worth
I one thing about that with this list, you know, I wonder if it moves away from what's appealing to Dungeons and Dragons. Like, we're creating like, if you want to do whatever you want, then do GURPS or something like that. And you're just like,
right,
here you go, here's advantages, skills, do whatever. You can make Batman. Yeah. Whereas here, it's like, can you make Batman? Oh, kind of.
So. If Batman was in the fantasy, yeah, sure. Now, what you said kind of reminds me of the fantasy heroic roleplay from the Cortex Plus Hacker's Guide, where they said, okay, here's your different kind of racial things. Here is a list of essentially superpowers you get. I don't think you got all of them. It was like, here's a pool you can pick from, pick a certain number. And then when you leveled up, it was kind of like, okay, and you can take this other kind of racially based power or whatever. But it was a bit more what Jeremy was saying, where here is the cool thing that I think dwarves are.
Yeah.
So that's the one I'm going to pick, because that's the one, to me, that makes dwarves cool. Where, like, these other things about, like, stone cunning or whatever, nah, I'm not that interested in that. Well, where another player might go, oh, that's the thing that makes a dwarf. And so,
4E had, like, stuff, racial stuff that you got when you leveled up.
It did, like the Paragon path.
But I think it gets down to, regardless of what you do, there's going to have to be this concept of what is a dwarf.
Oh, yeah, sure.
This is a dwarf, whether it's dwarven culture, the dwarven race, and it's just like, you got to define it. And I don't see Dungeons & Dragons like deviating from what's been a dwarf
for
the last 40 years for them. So, whether you choose from these abilities, and maybe constitution is one of them, like a constitution bonus. And honestly, if you throw in an ability bonus, everybody's going to, well, I'll pick that first.
I mean, if you get a certain number, but if it's like constitution bump or all these other kind of little ability things, that might be a more difficult choice.
Well, yeah, I mean, you could say you could pick, it's worth two slots, for example. You get five slots. If you pick an ability modifier, I still think people go,
They might, in which case you've designed a kind of a crappy game.
I'm doing it on the fly, man. Come on.
No. I wasn't nitpicking your idea. I'm just saying in any game, irregardless of the type of game, if there are obvious choices, then you haven't made the choice meaningful.
But I'm just wondering, when you define them, I guess what we've determined is that 5e is perfect.
Or D&D, sure.
D&D is perfect. So,
I just said nothing of the sort.
One thing about the way it is now, it's actually easy enough to go move those abilities. It's easy enough to house rule, I guess, which may not be a satisfactory answer for a lot of people.
Right.
Because, they have a problem with the message, the default sense. Having those bonuses, they're easy to shift around, and you say, instead of, but you can even like scratch off one in your house rule. Instead of getting two racial ability modifiers, one, the race gives you one.
And, oh, plus one. Yeah.
And, you, and then you go and write it all. For, each class gives you something. Yeah. In this discussion, we can't get away from the fact that people have a conception of what an elf is.
Yeah.
In Dungeons & Dragons, what a dwarf is and what a gnome is. And they're going to get something from that.
Right. What are they getting from a gnome?
Yeah, well,
crazy colored hair.
Funny. In the Pathfinder playtest, I played a gnome for maybe like the first time in like decades. And I was like, oh, I had no idea this is what a gnome was. It was totally, imagine like the little guys.
Well, it's also a Pathfinder gnome.
Yeah.
Oh, so yeah, I should check what they are.
So who knows what they are?
Yeah. I wasn't very happy with the gnome. I was like, oh, they're smaller. I thought they were bigger than halflings at the time.
Oh, smaller than actually smaller. Yeah, this one. Smaller, no beard.
Long nose.
Strangely colored hair.
Yeah.
And a vivacity for life or something.
Yeah,
which is what I was reading in the 5e, which doesn't sound
Oh, so it is Pathfinder. Yeah, no, it's the
that's
same.
That's not all that interesting, where it's like...
Yeah, I think...
That's what you gave me.
I think that was a call on 4e's part where they kicked them to the monster manual.
I'm still... Remember that little animated thing?
I thought that was funny.
That was funny. That little number. I'm a monster.
Yeah. That was great. Yeah.
So yeah, that was pretty funny.
Any predictions? Okay, there's going to be a Dungeons & Dragons 6th edition.
I thought you just said it was perfect.
Yeah, they're done.
They're done.
Fifth. This is gold. Let's just call this gold edition.
Or is there going to be D&D 5th edition essentials?
Work with me here. If there's a 6th edition, what would put a prediction? I mean, we had a couple ideas here. We didn't reach a consensus.
Were we ever going to?
I held out hope. prediction... 6th edition, what are they going to do with the racial? Are they going to keep the racial ability modifiers or are they going to change it?
They're going to keep them.
Yeah. I definitely think they'll keep them because I think the flavor, I think people coming to this game expect that. And if that wasn't there or if it was kind of just diluted and made very, you didn't feel that, I think that would be frustrating and that might actually send them over to Paizo.
we've seen what happens when D&D deviates too much from what the fans think D&D is, and that is
but old school D&D didn't give them, and like the Dungeons and Dragons that you got in the red box and the magenta box didn't have racial ability modifiers.
It did not, and those people who are fine with that play OSR games.
Yeah. My prediction is classes will provide bonuses to your abilities.
I look forward to proving you wrong.
fair enough. And they might, you might call it wishy-washy, they might try to preserve a little bit by the races also provide a bonus. And they'll split it over the two. But I think definitely 6th edition will have classes providing bonuses to their abilities.
They will not get rid of racial ability modifiers.
I'm being a little wishy-washy in my prediction in that I feel very strongly that classes in the 6th edition will provide
some kind of bonus.
A bonus to ability
yeah,
bonus.
Like a
wizards will provide an intelligence bonus, a sorcerer will provide a charisma bonus. But yeah, like what Jeremy says and what you're saying is that they don't want to create another Pathfinder is in order to do that as part of the package that they get, instead of getting like plus four, they might give you plus two to an ability, and they spread it out between the two as wishy-washy. But I definitely think that the classes will be providing them in the next edition.
That would be a way for them to balance classes too. Remember in 3.5, like skill points, that was another way to balance stuff between the classes. Remember classes got so many skill points every time they leveled up, and like fighter was like four and like rogue was like a bazillion.
Right? Yeah.
But like giving, actually I don't know if it would balance, but like giving like a paladin like plus two strength, plus one constitution or something like that, whereas like a druid will only be like plus one wisdom, right?
No, yeah.
If you did a difference, that's a way to balance class features.
Well, like a fighter. Like, you get like, when you think about it, like fighters all automatically, all fighters will get like a plus two to their constitution and you choose strength or dex, another plus two. You figure you're doing all that exercising, it's going to help your health.
Yeah, fighters were another one, kind of like the fighters are the humans of the class.
I was surprised you said paladin, because paladins get a lot of extra stuff, whereas fighters were always the ones, how do we make fighters
interesting
or kind of equal to wizards? You don't want to tell the person, hey, you can't, like a wizard. Wizard can control magic. You can't.
Right.
That's unfair. Why didn't you pick a wizard?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, the balance is, at first level, the fighter wins.
Yeah.
And wizards suck.
So I kill all the wizards. Yeah, exactly, all right. Exactly. Yeah, that a really strange like anti-magic campaign.
Well, it would be, except for
these, like, not racist, but like...
You're pretty xenophobic, or kind of...
Prejudiced.
Yeah, they're bigoted, That's assuming that all the wizards in the world are somehow all first level. Eventually, you're going to be like, okay, you're killing all these low-level wizards. Eventually, you're going to run into someone who outclasses you. Then what are you going to do?
Killing babies. Oh, geez. He looks a little weedy. He's not going to be a fighter. Yeah, that kind of went dark.
But yeah, it
did. Our apologies. Yeah.
Something about fighters. It seems like someone said every time people or players find a new way to make fighters interesting, Watsi carves that off and turns it into a different class.
Oh, yeah.
Which is how you get like warlords and all the other things where it's like, okay, that's way too cool. Something else now. Yeah.
Well, thank you for joining us for a discussion on racial ability bonuses. What would you do? Would you keep it as is, or would you move it to class, or would you do the wishy-washy compromise approach of spreading it out between them?
Pull a Lyle,
yeah. If you like this episode, please like, share, and subscribe, and let us know what you think in the comments below. Bye.
Bye.
Drive Through RPG. We average 9 new titles a day. That's over 60 a week. And we've got well over 15,000 RPG titles online right now. Drive Through RPG, the one true source for RPGs.
See us online at www.idleredhands.com. Music provided by Tripod Jimmy, and the song was Roadkill. Hope you enjoyed it. See you next time.